So, imagine with me, you are on your honeymoon with your spouse. And you are a 10 and they are a 2 in every sense that that could be true. And you have loved this spouse anyways. You have loved them very dearly. They don't deserve any of your love. There's nothing really exciting about them or anything in particular about this spouse that would draw you to them. But you are just that type of person that you love them anyway. And so you've done everything to make this marriage work. You've done everything to put it in place. And now you are on your honeymoon and you've rented a room. You've set the candles. The everything is there. And you've just got to go and confirm your vows and finish signing all of the paperwork for the marriage license and all of that. And so while you're off doing that, you come back and you find that your spouse is in bed with another person. After everything that you've done, after all the love that you've poured into this person, into this relationship, and on your honeymoon, no less, that is what you find. How do you feel in that moment? It may be hard for us even to imagine how we would feel in a moment like that. It may be even harder still to express that in concrete terms. The terms hurt and the terms betrayed, I don't think even begin to describe how we would feel in that moment. But maybe here's a question we could answer. What would you think in that moment? What would you think about the time you invested? What would you think about that other person and their commitment, their investment in you and in the relationship? You know, if this is what they're doing, even on the honeymoon, that doesn't really bode well for the rest of the marriage, does it? Now you're beginning to think, well, if they're doing this now, what's it going to be like 5 years from now or 10 years from now or 20 years from now? After the relationship grows and times of happiness and joy have come, and as well as times of hardship and trouble, what are you thinking then? If they can't be faithful to you even at the outset, what's it going to be like down the road? And so you have these thoughts and you have these feelings and you're thinking all of these things, and yet you determine, I'm going to take them back. I'm going to be faithful to them. I'm going to show them love. And maybe, just maybe, if I show them that type of faithfulness and that type of love, that now they will have the commitment for me that they need to. And so that's exactly what you do. You go and you confirm them and you affirm them and you bring them back to yourself and you forgive them for what they've done. And you say, we're going to make a go at this and we're going to try to make this thing work. And so that's exactly what you do. And then they do it again. And so you do the same thing and you think, well, if I just forgave them a second time and showed them this faithfulness a second time, surely by now, surely they'd have the commitment in the heart to be faithful to me. And this is just a self-perpetuating story, and on it goes. This is the story of Israel. As God was faithful to them time and time again, as He poured Himself out for them time and time again, as He, as a loving and forgiving and merciful husband, accepted Israel as His bride back to Him time after time after time. This morning we are continuing in our series of God's eternal purpose. And in particular, we want to focus this morning on the covenant relationship that God had with His people and God's faithfulness to His covenant despite the people's unfaithfulness to that very same covenant. So that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. Appreciate the songs that Kelly led us in, particularly that last song that we sung, Blessed Are They That Do His Commandments, because as we begin to talk about Israel and we begin to talk about the covenant, that's exactly what Moses said to them, that if you do these things, if you keep your end of the bargain, if you keep my covenant, God speaking through Moses says, I'm going to bless you, but if you don't, things aren't going to turn out as either of us would have them to. And so we're going to talk this morning a little bit about the tension that is there in the covenant as God is being faithful to His covenant, but His people are not being faithful to Him. And that's important as we consider our series this morning as we've been beginning to dive into this series as we have for several months now. What's one of the points that we've made? What's one of the foundational points that we've made? As God is fulfilling His purposes, as God is working in and through and for His people, sometimes they don't work for Him. Sometimes they don't allow Him to work as they would have Him to. And yet God can still fulfill His purpose even when it seems that His plan has gone off the track. And so that is going to be true, especially true when it comes to the nation of Israel. Let's just remind ourselves where we are here. We'll get to that in just a moment as we recap some of this series. Go ahead and be turning in your Bible, if you will. Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19 is where we are going to begin this morning. Exodus chapter 19. As you're finding Exodus 19 in your Bible, let me say good morning. It is good to see you this morning. I hope that you are glad to be here. Hope that you are excited to be here. Appreciate this opportunity that we have. I know I certainly do, to be here with you, to study from God's Word together, to be built up together, to sing songs of praises together, to partake of our covenant meal together, as we just did a few moments ago. It's so good to be here, and I hope that you are glad to be here as well. I really don't see any visitors among us. I mean, we have some people who are visiting, but I don't know that it's right to call you guys visitors, John and Deborah, but it's good to see you guys here. But if you are here this morning, we just want to let you know, for everybody here, we're glad to have you here this morning. Invite everybody to be back this evening at 6 p.m. We've got another opportunity to serve our God and to study from His Word. Brother Scott's going to be bringing our lesson this evening. I'm looking forward to that, and I know you are as well. And so let's be back this evening, 6 p.m., another opportunity to worship our God and to study from His Word. As we dive into this lesson, we want to remind ourselves of where we've been and where we're going as we talk about God's eternal purpose. Let's get the big picture here, as we've done at the beginning of each of these lessons. First, we want to notice that God's eternal purpose, this great plan that He's working out throughout history, it was from before the foundation of the world. And so as history unfolds and as we see things and events coming to pass, all of that's part of God's plan. And then when we get to Jesus and the church and everything that's going on there, that's not plan B, but that was plan A all along. That's all been built into this plan that God had, that He was ultimately going to fulfill this plan, accomplish this plan through Jesus Christ. The third thing we want to affirm about this plan that we get from the book of Ephesians, particularly Ephesians chapter 1, verses 3 through 14, is that this plan, it includes you and me. And this plan, the purpose of this plan, it is to unite all things to God. God is trying to unite all things to Himself, things in heaven and things on earth. Ultimately, this plan is for His glory. It would work out to the glory of God. And all nations, all peoples, all kings and rulers, and even those in the heavenly places, they would know the wisdom and the power and the glory of God as He's working this plan out throughout history and through His people. And so that's ultimately what this plan is. If at the very beginning man is separated from God in the garden, and as that separation process grows and man continues to sin against God, what God wants is to bring man back to Him and to enter into a covenant relationship with man once again. And so that is what He's trying to accomplish. We also want to know kind of where we've traveled in this series so far. If that's where it began, in a garden with man rebelling against God, and that rebellion growing and growing to the point in chapter 6 where God determines that He's going to wipe out man from the face of the earth, starting over with Noah, Noah being something of a recreation. And then that, again, seems to go off the tracks, right? There in chapter 11, as the people rebel against God in the Tower of Babel incident. And so God chooses one family in particular, one person in particular, to begin working through, to work through Him and to work through His family, to unite all people, all nations back to himself. If he can set up this one family, this one person, and all his descendants after him to be faithful to him, and to have this special relationship with him, all the other nations would be blessed by that and would want to enter into that relationship as well. And so that's what God purposed. That's what God planned to do through Abraham. And so God made several promises to Abraham. We could number those, and they are many, they are numerous, but we typically distill it down to just three promises. The land promise, the nation promise that God would make Abraham and his descendants this great nation, this great multitude of people. In fact, he would be the father of many nations. And also the blessing promise that through his seed, through his descendants, plural, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And of course, all of that is fulfilled in Christ. But we could summarize that. We could distill that down even further. It's just a single promise, a single covenant that God makes with Abraham to be God to him and for him and his descendants to be his people. And so that's what God is doing through Abraham. In this covenant relationship that he establishes with Abraham, it is an everlasting covenant. It's a covenant where God says, I am going to do this. And so God purposes to do something for his people. He makes an agreement with his people. He binds himself to his people, to the descendants of Abraham, that he is going to bless them in this relationship. And so we talked last month, you may remember, how all of that, all of God's promise, all of God's plan, all of this covenant relationship, all of that is being worked out then in the story of the Israelites as they go down into Egypt, as God hears their cry and sees their groaning and brings them up out of Egypt for the purpose of bringing them into a new land where they can continue to grow and to multiply. And as they kept his commandments and followed his will and observed his law and the wisdom therein, as they did what God said, as they acted as this holy nation and kingdom of priests, all the nations of the earth would be blessed through them. God is fulfilling this plan through the Israelites. And that's the significance of the Exodus story that we mentioned last month. That God is fulfilling the promise to Abraham, that the covenant that God made with Abraham is carrying over to the book of Exodus. And really, as we go throughout the Bible, we're really telling this one story of God being faithful to his promises to Abraham, of God fulfilling his covenant with Abraham and being faithful to it. And so really, that's the significance of the Exodus story that I want us to understand as we begin this morning, that God is fulfilling his end of the bargain, that God is keeping covenant with his people, that God is doing what he said he would do. He is being faithful. And so what he calls the people to do then, again, God being the 10 and his people being the 2, the ones who are undeserving of all of his love and covenant loyalty. All of that was meant to drive them to faithfulness. And so here in Exodus 19, we've got the story of Mount Sinai as the people prepare to meet God at Sinai, and this covenant relationship is affirmed or confirmed, and there are more stipulations added to this covenant. I want us to understand as we look at the covenant that we see here that this is not necessarily a new covenant. It's different, yes. There are different stipulations. There are different regulations going on with this. Different responsibilities now as part of this covenant. But we're still talking about the covenant made to Abraham. God is still fulfilling that covenant and fulfilling that story. And so while we can speak of the law, the Torah that Moses lays out here in the book of Exodus and also the book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers and Deuteronomy, we're still talking about one covenant that has just been reworked, that has just been given new meaning and new implications in light of the new circumstances. Whereas before, with Abraham, really the only obligations, the only responsibility that Abraham had, at least that we're told throughout the story and the narrative, is that What did he have to do? He had to keep circumcision, and they had to circumcise all the males that were part of either his family or part of his house in some way, whether they were servants, but identified with his descendants. And they had to be circumcised, all the males did, as a sign of the covenant. So that's one responsibility they had. They were also told that they had to walk blamelessly before God. And for whatever that meant and whatever implications that had, that's really all that we're told. But here, as the people have grown and as they've come out of this slavery and as they are becoming a nation proper, God has certain stipulations, certain things that he wants them to do. And so while in some sense, again, it might be proper to talk about the law of Moses and the stipulations of the covenant under Moses, we need to understand we're still dealing with the same story. Same story is still being worked out. The same covenant is still being worked out. And I want us to understand as we talk about keeping the covenant and as Israel is obligated now to keep the covenant, they are doing so because of God's faithfulness. Look with me, if you will, very quickly. Chapter 19. Let's just read verses 4 through 5. As God is speaking to the house of Jacob, the people of Israel, he says, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. This is what I did. I was being faithful to my promise to Abraham. I was keeping my end of the bargain. I was fulfilling and being faithful to the covenant. This is what I did. Now notice verse 5. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel. Again, God did something. God was faithful. God kept his end of the bargain. God is fulfilling his promises to Abraham through the people of Israel. Therefore, you keep my covenant. You keep my commandments. You do the things that are required of you as I am revealing to you the implications of this covenant relationship. You be to me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. They're to do it because God first was faithful. I also want us to notice, let's go to chapter 20 and in verse 1. This is the first time that we have the Ten Commandments here, the Decalogue, the ten words, the ten instructions from God. And one thing that I want us to just think about for a moment is these are not numbered for us in some systematic way. He does not just go down and list them number 1, number 2, number 3, all the way through number 10. And so why that's relevant is that people, as they've read this passage, as they've reflected on this passage throughout time, have had a different way of numbering them. And so, for instance, the Jews, the early tradition in Judaism was that when in verse 2 it says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. For the Jews, and at least in the earlier traditions, that was actually, they saw that as the first commandment. That you had to believe in this God. Not only believe in him in some sort of existential sense that, oh yes, I believe that there is a God who exists. But that the God who exists is not only creator, but he is redeemer. He's the one who brought us out of the land of Egypt. And so, at least in early Jewish traditions, they understood that this was essential to what God was asking of them. And then what they did was verses 3 through 6, is they grouped all of that together. So this language about having no other gods before me and making no graven image or no idols, all of that was clumped in together in their minds. And then the rest of the commandments work out the way that we would normally number them. Interestingly enough, the Roman Catholics have the same thing going on with verses 3 through 6, but instead of seeing verse 2 as a commandment, they actually split up the commandments about coveting there in verse 17 and to do two different commandments there. All of that is to say, and the way that we typically number the commandments, at least the way that I've heard them numbered and understood them is that it begins with verse 3, verses 4 through 6 are separate. So the first one is, you shall have no other gods before me. The second is that you shall make for yourself no carved image, and then so on and so forth, not taking the Lord's name in vain, keeping the Sabbath holy, honoring the father and mother, not murdering, and so on and so forth. The reason I point out that there's different ways of viewing this is because whether or not you see verse 2 as a commandment in and of itself, or you simply see that as a prologue to the commandments, that is vitally important, what verse 2 says. Let's read that. It says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And whether you see that as one of the commandments that you've got to believe this, the point remains the same. This is important. This is foundational to the rest of what God says here. This idea that God is the God who redeems, that God is the God who is faithful, that God is the God who kept his promises and keeps his promises and fulfills what he says he's going to do. And so everything else really is just an outworking of that fact. It's the implications of that fact. If this is the type of God that we serve, if God has been faithful to his covenant, if Yahweh has been faithful to his covenant, then verse 3, it makes sense, logically, that you shall have no other gods before me. You put nothing before me. You revere nothing before me. You worship nothing before me. You listen to nothing else besides me, because I am the God who is faithful. And so all of this, all of what God says, all of what we are required, or what is required of us, is based on this fact that God is faithful to what he says he is going to do. He is faithful to his people. He is faithful to his covenant. And then there is a devotion to God above all else. This is what we've just said. If God is a faithful God, if God is the God who delivered them out of the house of Egypt, or the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, if God is the God who defeated the gods of the Egyptians, then they should serve no other God. They should want to serve no other God. They should be wholly devoted and dedicated to God, right? And so when they go into the land of Canaan and they encounter all of these other nations that worship all of these other gods, they should not be enticed to worship them, because their God is a God who is faithful. And if God could strike down the gods and defeat the gods of Egypt, the most powerful nation of the time, what does any other God hold to this God? And so, at the very essence, the very basis of this covenant, the very basis of what God is requiring of the people, is that they have this devotion to God before all else. And so we have what is written for us in Deuteronomy chapter 6 there, what the Jews called the Shema. It was this commitment to love the Lord their God with all their heart, their soul, their strength, and their might. And what does Jesus say when he's asked about what is the great commandment? What is the greatest of all the 613 commandments in the law? And Jesus says, it's this. It's that you love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your strength, and your mind. Why? Because that undergirds everything else. Everything else is built off of that fact. Off of that understanding. And so what God was requiring, if we can distill it down, if we can boil it down to one thing and one thing only, we can just get a summary of what the law was about. It was about being devoted to God. That's what he wanted. And so all the people, they agreed to keep this covenant. They agree back in chapter 19 and verse 8, they say that all the Lord has spoken we will do. They also agree after Moses has come down from Mount Sinai. In chapter 24, we actually have the ceremony in which the covenant has been confirmed. And it's interesting that Moses takes some blood, and he sprinkles the blood on the altar. And he takes some more of that same blood, and what does he do with that blood? He sprinkles it on the people. And the people say, after that, or in accordance with that, verse 7, all that the Lord has spoken we will do, we will be obedient. And then they are sealed with that blood of the covenant. Moses says, behold the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all of these words. Before we partook of the Lord's Supper earlier, Scott read for us from the book of Luke, and in Luke's gospel, as he talks about the emblems of the Lord's Supper, he makes specific reference to the blood of the covenant. And the significance of that, you may remember we did a lesson in a different series a couple of years ago almost, where we were looking at some of the shadows of the Old Testament that are being fulfilled and being worked out in the New. You may remember we talked about our covenant meal. And how when we talk about the blood of the covenant, it's not just that Jesus' blood was shed on our behalf, that is true. But that blood, it binds us to this covenant. It binds us to this agreement that we have made with God. It binds us to this idea that we will be holy, that we will do what God has said. And so they say, we're going to do this. And Moses throws on them the blood and says, this is the blood of the covenant. This is what binds you to God and God to you. You will do what he says. This blood is a sign for you. And so they say, we're going to do it. But you know how the story ends. You know how the story unfolds. They don't. They're not faithful to God. And time again, what you see is this unfaithfulness on their part. It doesn't matter that God had brought them out of the land of Egypt. It didn't matter that God had worked all these great wonders on their behalf and redeemed them and was bringing them into this land. And even after he had brought them into the land, it doesn't matter that God did any of that to them. They were disobedient, I guess is the proper way to say that. They were unfaithful, is where I was going. You may remember we ended last lesson with the exhortation to remember the Exodus. Remember what God has done. Remember the type of God that we serve, the God that's faithful, the God that will deliver us from the greatest of enemies. When you fail to do that, when you fail to recognize the goodness and the love that spouse has shown you, and you fail to remember all of the things that they've done for you, and you begin to look around and you see other potential spouses that you could be with, and they start to look pretty good because you haven't remembered who your spouse is, that's when unfaithfulness happens. And that's when you get adultery on the honeymoon. And that's exactly what happens in this story. Because just after the covenant has been confirmed, just after they have said, I do, as it were, as God is getting everything ready, as God is working out the implications there on Mount Sinai with Moses, and as Moses is bringing down to the people the rest of what they need to know as far as what it means to be a holy people, a holy nation before God, they turn to other gods. And so we have the tragic story there in Exodus chapter 32, where the people, they're wondering, where is God? Where is Moses? They're not here. Moses has been up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. It takes, brothers and sisters, it takes 40 days, 40 nights, a little bit more than 5 weeks after they've established this covenant has been confirmed, before they begin worshiping other gods. And so they say, up, make for us gods who will go before us. As for this man Moses who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And so Aaron takes the gold and the jewelry and all the things to make this golden calf. And Aaron sets it up as if the calf is Yahweh. But the way that the story tells it, they're worshiping other gods. The way that Stephen interprets it there in his sermon in Acts chapter 7, this was tantamount to worshiping other gods. They could spin it however they wanted to. They were not being faithful to Yahweh. And so there's adultery on the honeymoon. And again, what are you thinking when that happens? How is the rest of this relationship going to work itself out? Probably not very good if that's the first thing that goes on. And so not only is there adultery on the honeymoon, but there is wavering on the way as this relationship continues to grow. As God leads them through the wilderness, we've got complaining and craving there in Numbers chapter 11. And they complain against God. They're in Numbers chapter 11 because they don't have the food that they'd like to have. They're not content with the manna that God has provided for them. And so when God provides them meat to eat, they eat it up ravenously. And then God devours them. He destroys them because of that incident. Because what is it? When you begin to complain against your spouse, when you begin to crave something or someone else, what are you saying about your spouse? You don't mean much to me. What you've done does not mean much to me. That I don't care what you've done, how you've been. I want this other thing. You are not good enough. What they are saying in essence is, God, you are not good enough. What you have provided is not good enough. They are violating the whole purpose, what the whole essence of their commitment was supposed to be. They're supposed to be devoted to this one God, yet they're serving other gods. They're complaining and grumbling against their God, craving other things. And then chapter 14 happens. We all know the story of chapter 14. That is when the 10 spies go into the wilderness. 12 actually went, or not to the wilderness, they go into the land of Canaan. 12 went, but 10 of them came back, and what did they say? We see giants. We see the sons of the Anakim, the descendants of the Anakim, and these people that have long nets, and these people who are great, and they're numerous, and they've got these fortresses and these mighty cities, and it doesn't matter that God delivered us from the most powerful nation on the kingdom of, on the face of the earth at the time. We're scared of these people and this land. And so they turn back, and you know what they say? Let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. How absurd is that? And then they begin to appoint from themselves, verse 4. They say, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Again, what are they saying? God, everything that you've done for us, everything that you did for us in bringing us out of the land of Egypt, we don't care about any of that. In fact, we want to go back to unfortunate circumstance, enviable circumstance that they were in before. They want to go back to Egypt. They reject God once again. And there really are many stories as we go throughout the book of Numbers of this sort of thing. But I just want us to consider one more there in chapter 25 of the book of Numbers. As they're enticed, ultimately we learn by Balaam to serve and worship other gods there in the land of Moab. And all of this is undergirding. All of this is rather undermining that covenant loyalty, that devotion, that faithfulness that they should have had toward God. And so they did not obey. They did not listen. They rebelled. They complained against their God. They worshipped other gods. They were not content with Him. And so it's a covenant in conflict. It's a covenant in conflict. This relationship, there's conflict throughout this. Again, there's adultery on the honeymoon. There's wavering on the way. What was the problem? What was the issue for the people of Israel? What could the covenant be kept? I think that's a question we're meant to ask by the time we get to the end of the book of Numbers. If the people have rebelled time and time again, could the covenant be kept? Was it just too hard, too difficult? And in fact, Moses is going to take up this question in the book of Deuteronomy. This is jumping forward much later in the story. The first generation is now died out, and the people, the new generation, the second generation, are on the cusp of entering to the land. But this is what Moses says. He says, for this commandment, Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 11, this commandment that I command you today, it's not too hard for you, neither is it far off. And he goes on to say, it is not in heaven that you should say, who shall ascend to heaven and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it? For the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart so that you can do it. Now, the point that Moses is making here is that the commandment of God, the covenant obligations that the people had toward God, it's not that they were too hard. It's not that they were too difficult. Yes, there were 613 of them, but it was within their power to do it. It's not as if God had asked them to do something that was difficult, that something that only a superhuman could do, or something that was so unattainable, so incomprehensible, that you had to go seek it from heaven, or you had to go across the sea, and you had to go find some far off wisdom somewhere to be able to do it and to know it. They could do it. So what was the issue? Well, the issue was their hearts. After they sinned there in Exodus chapter 32, with the golden calf incident, what God says about this people is that they are stiff-necked people. They are stubborn, that they have hard hearts. That even though God has done all of these things for them, even though God's heart is wholly set on them, their heart is not wholly set on Him. Their hearts are hard toward God, toward His covenant, toward what He has asked them to, toward being faithful to Him. They're hard-hearted, they're a stubborn people. And so the answer then is that God was going to have to circumcise their heart. That's ultimately what Moses concludes, is that God is going to have to circumcise their heart. And it's not that what He's asked is too hard or too incomprehensible. It's just that they are too stubborn and too hard-hearted to listen. Unless we think that this is only a story about Israel, that this is only an application about Israel. It's the same thing that happened in the garden with Adam and Eve. Same thing that happened in chapter 4 through chapter 6 of the book of Genesis, as the people are desiring and craving what they want and fighting and devouring others to get it. It's the same thing that happens there in Genesis chapter 11, as the people at the Tower of Babel don't want to listen to God. They, in their stubbornness, want to exalt themselves and stay where they are. It's the same problem that all humanity has. It is, will we have our hearts that are softened to be obedient and to be faithful to God, or will our hearts be hardened so that we will search and we will seek out only what we want? And so Moses foretold of a time when God would humble them and He would circumcise their heart. Chapter 30 and verse 6, it says, "And the Lord will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring, and you will love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, that you may live." What was going to keep, allow them to have the devotion to God that they needed to have? God was going to circumcise their heart. And this would come much later on in Israel's story. In fact, the prophets would tell about this fact, that we're familiar with the language of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 36, we've looked at this passage several times there, where in Ezekiel verse 24 and following, we are told that God is going to take the hard heart of stone of the people and give them a heart of flesh. Then He's going to take that heart that's hardened against God and He's going to give them a heart that is malleable, that is conformed and shaped to the will of God. Notably, in Jeremiah chapter 31, Jeremiah also uses similar language. Let's just turn there very quickly. Jeremiah 31, let's read this together. Jeremiah 31, beginning in verse 31, the Hebrew writer and the book of Hebrews is going to pick up on this language. But Jeremiah 31, and beginning in verse 31, it says, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke." Notice the end of verse 32, "though I was their husband." We're going back to that imagery of God being this faithful husband that we looked at earlier. "Though I was their husband, declares the Lord." What's going to be different about this covenant? Verse 33, "For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. No longer shall each one teach his neighbor and his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord,' for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more." As great as the covenant that God made with Abraham, and as great as the covenant that was reaffirmed in the days of Moses was, as great as that action was of God bringing them out of the land of Egypt, it did not provide for them the basis that they needed to be faithful to God, But God says, I'm going to do something so unimaginable, so different, so new, that you're going to know me. And your heart is going to be malleable to the point where I can write my law on it, and it is going to be who you are. It's going to become who you are. Because I am going to forgive your iniquity. I am going to remember your sin no more. And ultimately, all of this is pointed to Jesus Christ. That what God did through Jesus was soften our hearts. Take that hard heart of stone and turn it into a heart of flesh. Circumcise our heart. Take off that covering that surrounds our heart that keeps us from being able to be faithful and wholeheartedly devoted to God. God would circumcise our heart. And so all this, again, we're moving to Jesus. All of it's going to be fulfilled in Jesus. I want to look very quickly, one final thing as we close. And that is the character of the one who has made this covenant relationship. Turn with me to Leviticus chapter 26. Leviticus 26. Here we are given blessings for obedience and curses, punishment for disobedience. And we're told that if Israel goes and they are unfaithful to God, that there is going to be certain consequences and there are going to be certain people who will not experience the blessings of the covenant because they do not keep up their end of the bargain. But I want us to notice that God is never unfaithful. Even if people break covenant with God, God never breaks covenant with them. And so in verse 9, God says, I will turn to you and make you fruitful and multiply you and confirm my covenant with you. That's what God is going to do. And even after the text goes on to talk about disobedience there later on in the book of Leviticus, particularly let's look at Leviticus chapter 15, verse 15. It says, if you spurn my statutes and if your soul abhors my rules so that you will not do all my commandments, but you break my covenant, this I will do to you. He's going to send them various things, various signs, various diseases to try to turn them back. Let's drop down a few verses later. Verses 25. God is going to bring a sword upon them if they continue to be contrary and walk contrary to his ways. He's going to bring a sword upon them that shall execute vengeance for the covenant. And yet, even as the people continue to rebel, here's what God says. Read with me, beginning in verse 40. But if they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers and the treachery that they committed against me, and also walking contrary to me, so that I walk contrary to them and brought them into the land of their enemies, if then their uncircumcised heart is humbled and they can make amends for their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Jacob. And I will remember my covenant with Isaac and my covenant with Abraham. And I will remember the land. Verse 44. Yet for all of that, that is, when all the time they abhor my rules and my statutes, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not spurn them, nor will I abhor them, so as to destroy them utterly and break my covenant with them. For I am the Lord their God. But I will for their sake remember the covenant with their forefathers, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt, in the sight of all the nations, that I might be their God. I am Yahweh. God says, it's a real possibility, and in fact we know, and Moses is going to go on later and say in the book of Deuteronomy, it's not only a possibility, it's an eventuality, that the people are going to turn and they're going to spurn me. And when they do, they're going to face various diseases, various signs, various captivities, various things to try to turn them back. But even in all of that, even as they break my covenant, I have not broken covenant with them. I will remember the covenant that I made with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God is faithful to his covenant. God is faithful to his people. And that's the point I want us to end on this morning. Now, Paul makes the point in the book of Romans, and really, most of Paul's argument in the book of Romans, as he talks about the righteousness of God, I think what he's really talking about is the faithfulness of God. The righteousness of God is seen in that he is faithful to his covenant. And so he says in Romans chapter 3 and verse 3, that even if Israel was faithless, God would still be faithful. Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 13, if we are faithless, he remains faithful. That's the type of God we are in a covenant relationship with, brothers and sisters. We're in a relationship with a God who, even when we commit adultery on the honeymoon, even when we waver along the way in our relationship, a God who remains faithful to us at all times and will fulfill what he has said that he will do for us. And so the question that each and every one of us need to ask ourselves this morning is, in light of the fact that God is faithful and will always be faithful, is will I walk faithfully before him? Will I keep covenant with him? Or will I be faithless? Maybe it is that you are here this morning. You're not a Christian, not a child of God. Recognize the same God who was faithful time and time again to the Jews, the same God who has made a new covenant with us with better promises. And he will be faithful to those promises. We come to him on the basis of his faithfulness. Put your trust, your faith in him. Walk faithfully before him. Maybe it is that you are a Christian, you are a child of God, but you have not been walking faithfully. Turn back to him. Recognize that God is there. He is here. He is ready and willing to forgive and to bring you back into his loving arms. He is that type of God. Turn back to him this morning. If you're here this morning, you have any need, we can help you in any way. We ask you come forward as we stand and as we sing.